pretty much always played the same type of ball my entire life, but I recently made a change that a lot of other people are making. I put the Callaway Chrome Softball in my bag. I played with it all week in England. The adjustment period was way shorter than I was expecting, and I'm completely sold. We're here to tell you about the trip. Let's go.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, welcome back to part two of the England trip wrap-up. If you missed part one, I would recommend going back and listening to that part first. Tron and I spent 4 days in England playing golf. The six courses we played were the Belfry, West Lancashire, Royal Birkdale, Royal Liverpool, Wallasey, and Lytham. The first four on that list are covered in part one. We're going to get to Wallasey and Lytham within this episode. And as well, we're bringing in James Summerside from Golf Breaks, who's going to talk a bit about how the trip came together, what kind of options are there out there for listeners from the U.S., either coming over to the U.K. There's a sweepstakes giveaway to Mexico. There's options to go down and play in the Dominican Republic. And we're just going to talk about a bit more about the overall general experience of the trip within this one, as well as break down those final two courses. So without further ado, hope you enjoy.
And then that night, we drove north a little bit. And
stayed
we
up in Blackpool.
Yeah, stayed up in Blackpool. And
woke up Sunday morning this morning. Drove back towards Liverpool and played at Wallasey Golf Club. I think
the home of Stableford.
The home of Stableford. It is on all of their t-shirts, on the scorecard, on the yardage book. I think I liked it the most out of our threesome, probably because I played rather well, I would say, this morning.
So it was across the estuary or the river from Liverpool proper. First of all, Liverpool, I like infrastructure. I like bridges and tunnels and ports and shit like that. I'm kind of weird like that. But Liverpool, like, they had one of the coolest tunnels.
Long-ass tunnel went under that river.
Yeah.
I've been in some in Norway that are, like, legitimately 15 kilometers.
But this was, I mean, it was deep and, like, wide. That was a big-ass tunnel. I was psyched. I think we went through it like three times.
Tron's tunnels.
Yeah, I just love infrastructure. But yeah, it's kind of down maybe 15, 20 minutes south of Liverpool proper, but right on the ocean. And that was probably the one course where I felt like I was out of the country.
Yeah.
Out of the United States. Like it felt a little bit foreign to me.
I loved the clubhouse is super close to the first tee box. Like it kind of frames the back of the first tee box. The first few holes were phenomenal, and you get out to the fourth tee for it. What I mean, the best view we saw at any hole on this trip, and one of the best golf holes we played, I'd say.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a par five, dogleg left. But you can miss into the other fairway. The 17th fairway is right to the left.
I mean, really, you can just step on a driver and hit
it. It's a total
200 yards, like, either way. And it's
total green light. The ball's in the air forever. And you're looking right out at the Irish Sea. Yeah. There's a beach walking path right there. There's a little fence there to keep people off the course. But, I mean, that was I don't know how many pictures we took on the top of that tee box. I mean, that was one of my favorite holes that we played. It might be my favorite hole that we played on the trip. It reminds me of like number 6 or 7 at Ballybunion, I think number 7, and number 4 at Pacific Dunes, as far as the hole that just frames a big, huge body of water with a great view. It gives you an aerial view of that water. And I loved like a dogleg right par 5. Dogleg left par 5 is like straight up my alley, and
being able to aim it as far left as you want.
Yeah, that helps as well. I had a little smother hook going this week. I'd put it way up there with someone.
For me, it reminded me most of played out at Half Moon Bay a couple times out at the Ritz out there, and it reminded me of the Lynx course there, the last couple holes, like where you're right, you're on the cliffs kind of above the Pacific, and but it's very Lynx-y and wide open. Like, it was very enjoyable. And then really 5-6. I felt like that one, it ran out of a little bit of steam towards the end of the front nine. A little bit. There were a couple holes.
There were a lot of, it wasn't a perfect golf course. It was a lot of, they had a lot of really good holes. There were some holes that were kind of meh, but I don't know. The overall, it's not the same kind of experience as the Royal courses.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like, the greens were fantastic.
The greens were the best I think we saw overall.
Yeah.
Litham was good on the front nine. The back nine greens were not as good. Yeah. These were the best greens we saw. Yeah.
But it was a little scruffy around some of the edges.
Yeah.
Like on the rough or that sort of thing. So 7, 8, 9 I thought were a little bit weak. And then we got to, I think we got to like 10, 11 and it just got...
It picked back up.
It got awesome again.
It picked back up hard. The great par 3, 12th, I think it was.
Old Glory
with the bunkers surrounding it. Couple good par 5s. It took driver out of our hand a lot, which I like. I think that's a really fun part of Lynx golf. You hit a lot of 3 irons.
Solly hit 3 iron off of like 5 tees in a row.
That's fine. What's wrong with that? I shot 75. No. I don't want to hear it. There's a lot of holes that there's no real reason to. And I mean, let's get some yardages on some of these. I mean, there's like a lot of 340 holes that you couldn't drive. Yeah. And
well, so that was my thing. Like, so, like 8 was 385-ish. 10 was 310.
But like a severe uphill dogleg right. That was kind of a cool hole. I like that.
11 was like 3.
Can we talk about James' cheeky forward he played on that hole? He's got 90 yards in. He hit a forward. He did like a hybrid chip up the hill. Where did it end up? Did it go through? No, it got up on the front.
No, that was, yeah.
That was very
he
cheeky.
He did that a couple times.
Yeah.
Like more, increasingly so throughout the trip. So I was putting from everywhere. James was taking forward from everywhere.
Way off the green. It was,
and then
it was. We made it around easily in under 4 hours. I thought the 18th hole was not our favorite hole, but I loved the way it came right back to the clubhouse, right underneath the patio. Like people can sit and watch.
15 was cool, and then I thought 17 was one of the best holes we played. I thought that was top 4 or 5 holes we played. The one.
Oh man, that was
like,
yeah.
That reminded me of like the best of Northern Michigan or the best of like just. Really,
that was a tough hole.
Yeah, it was like 450 uphill into the wind.
So that hole frames the fourth hole that I was talking about. So that if you miss left, you're on the fourth hole, so you can see the ocean again. And it's a blind second shot to this green that goes
depending back uphill. Upon if you hug the left side with your drive, you can see it, and then it like kind of goes up into this. Almost like an inlet, and then the green is back in like this little harbor amongst all this heather. It was so cool.
Yeah, man, that was a really fun golf course. I love that.
But the drive kind of, I don't know, like I thought the drive was a little bit, I was kind of surprised. It was a little bit gimmicky on 18, but then your second shot into 18, the clubhouse is right behind, and it was a fantastic approach.
So beautifully.
Yeah, I thought like this course wasn't perfect by any stretch. But it's a perfect change of pace from the other courses.
And it would be a very high recommendation for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a must play, but if somebody's going there, again, if the question was, hey, we're playing here and here, what's another course maybe I haven't heard of? I would say Walls. I know a lot of people have heard of it. I hadn't before.
Also, like, you still want to go to, I mean, if you played Litham or Birkdale, like, every day you just get the shit beat out of you.
It would hurt a little
bit. You're worn out. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good change of pace. It's not an easy course by any stretch, but you just don't have to be quite as on point, and you can spray it a little bit more with some of your drives. But it's still demanding as hell on the par threes, and there's some great long holes too. So, Wallasey was cool.
Wallasey.
And then we need to get James on here to like pronounce all of these for us too, because they sound totally different and way more exotic and cool coming out of his mouth.
They're meant to be said with a British accent.
Yeah. But yeah, and then we scooted on up north, back up north to Blackpool to play Royal Lytham and St. Anne's in the afternoon.
Final round of the trip.
So it was daylight savings time. We sprang forward today.
Yes, yeah, so spring forward 2 weeks after the U.S. does. So yeah. We teed off at 3:00. There was no one out on that golf course on a 60-degree sunny day. Wind was wet. So we had the opposite of the prevailing wind, which meant the first hole was a 200-yard par 3 dead into the wind. Second hole was 410-yard par 4.
First of all, you go in the pro shop. Pro shop's like separate from the clubhouse. And the pro reminds me that there's, you know, 250 bunkers on the course, I think. I was like, oh, yeah, like that's exactly the visual.
Sixth round, we're so, worn
yeah,
out.
He's like, play for position, don't necessarily play, you know, jockey for distance throughout the day. So, yeah, I mean, you get right out there, first hole's like, just, I really like a par 3 first hole. I think that's cool.
This one is tough.
Yeah,
this really is tough. Hard. It was almost unreachable with a 3-iron. It might have been unreachable. I didn't get there.
And again, like so the wind was opposite. So typically it's either kind of a crosswind or downwind. And then the second and third holes, like, so it was a 440-ish yard par 4 for us today. The second was, and then a 470-yard par 4.
We were one. We're playing the red. 457.
Yeah, but some of these tees we were.
Yeah, that's true. We were a little further back. The third hole, that was the one we were talking about that was not reachable.
And there's a train. There's a train track running all the way down the right side of both of these holes, to where, like, and the wind is just whipping. I think on number two, I found my ball each time, but all my shots were. I know two. I hit a great approach in. I was so wipey with my swing, just wipey.
And not a good visual if you're wipey to have those train tracks run down the right side.
Not good.
Not good.
Especially with the wind right into your face. But yeah, the greens were relatively flat. But this was the course too where I felt like when they have the tournament, like this course with rough and with, like, I felt like they could turn the greens up to another notch more than any of the other courses we played and just make this thing.
Yeah. The surfaces were really good.
Yeah.
They got a little choppy on the back nine, but it was, yeah. it was, I thought the second best greens behind Wallasey that we putted.
And it's pretty flat, but it's kind of, there's a lot of gorse and heather and you feel, there's some miniature dunes.
That little mini dunes kind of roll in the fairway.
But it's inland. Like, you're in the middle. I mean, it almost feels like a town square, like a giant town square that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just, they've got these little, it was kind of like prairie dunes in the fact that they've got these little tiny waves in the fairways that are just kind of...
it's a cool visual effect.
Yeah.
Like, and the just, bunkering...
The bunkering was, it was the best bunkering of any course I've ever played.
Yeah.
By far, just the shaping around the bunkers, the placement of the bunkers, and just the aesthetics of the bunkers was absolutely second to none.
If you're missing a green in the spot you're not trying to miss it in, you probably ended up in a bunker. Like if you pull one, and even if you didn't know a bunker was there, and it's like not the clear place to miss, you're probably in a bunker. And I love how the bunkers line you up off the tee.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's almost always
fair. It was all out there.
There's almost always if there's a bunker that comes in on the left at 240, the one on the right comes in at 270. So you have the option to carry the one on the left, but just got to avoid reaching the one on the right. It was never like you have to place one in between these two bunkers. I don't like that on tee shots.
But yeah, this one was pretty much. I mean, it's no surprise, like, David Duval, Tom Lehman, Ernie Els, I think, have won the last three Opens there. Adam Scott's played exceptionally well there. Like, it was...
For the first 68.
Yeah. It was I mean, you had to golf your ball. Like, this was the hardest of the courses we played. Just from a golf perspective, like, this was, in my mind, this was the best golf course. I thought the last five holes or so were, they were okay, but through the first 15, through the first 14, it was unbelievable.
It was so much fun.
And
that was our best win, most win we got to play with.
And then, seven's like this nearly 600-yard par five.
Oh my God. And we played it straight in the room. That hole. That was like a four-shot par five.
James hit a driver off the deck there that was pretty gnarly. It was spectacular. The sixth. She got back-to-back par fives there for, you know, I think the pros play six as a par four. And then eight is like, you didn't really like eight.
I did. I don't love approaches up to like flat, like to elevated green surfaces that you can't like see the surface of.
So, but I felt like that was kind of the beauty of it. So you go back, you feel like you're like 4 miles away from the clubhouse. Like it almost goes straight out.
All into the wind.
Yeah. So I think typically this hole's got a little bit more strategy to it because it's like, or strategy, I should say. Strategy, like George W. Bush here. You got three cross bunkers out there at like 330, 340 yards out, which typically it's downwind and you kind of have to
think about them off the
tee. Yeah, think about them off the tee. And then it kind of goes straight up to this false frontish green. And it's kind of like, it's a really lush corner of the property too. There's some really great trees back there. It was very cool. The train's all the way down the right side of that again.
Nine's a cool little par three.
And then nine, it's kind of like a little, kind of reminded me of like a corner pocket on a pool table.
Yeah, you're far out furthest point on the course.
Yeah, and it's kind of wedged into this little corner of the property. You kind of hit diagonal into the corner of the property and then start coming back towards the clubhouse after it. But
there's apartments all around.
Yeah, stuff. But it's not long. It's like 150, 160 yards.
Even for the pros, it's not long.
Yeah, but there's seven bunkers around the green, and I think I made a mess of this one. But it's just a really, really interesting, fun little par three.
284 to the front. Oh. That sound you just heard was Tron taking driver off the deck from way downtown on the 11th hole at Royal Lytham & St. Anne's. You may have also heard my reaction to it. I don't think I could help it after hearing that sound and seeing the baby fade. That ball rolled all the way up to the front of the green. He almost made his eagle. We were smashing the Callaway Epic driver all over England this past weekend. If you can't tell, we're still excited about it. You should be excited about it as well. You can find out more about the Callaway Epic Driver, how you can get fitted for the right one for you at callawaygolf.com. Back to the rest of the podcast.
It got so much more fun when we turned back towards the clubhouse and got to play downwind.
Yeah. I mean, really, so really, like, looking at the routing, 1, 2, 3, 4. So when you're out at, like, 8 and 9, you're like 2,000 to 2,500 yards away from the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Like it's, but you can still kind of see it too. Like it's
an awesome,
it's a really, it's a really cool, it's a really long course. And it's all inland. So it's, you know, it's kind of winding or just square in the middle of these two towns almost. And then 10, we kind of flipped around and went straight downwind. But the bunkering from like 7 or 8. I mean, 7 had how many? 7 had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 bunkers, and each of them was really well placed.
Yeah, and there's a lot of holes that have these bunkers maybe, you know, at 60 yards from the green that don't make a ton of sense. Like it's a longer par four. That shouldn't come into play until you hit one into the rough.
You get out of position.
You got to think about those bunkers with your next shot. If you want to try to hit a runner, run down the fairway, you cannot do it. Those bunkers are just absolute death if you hit them into them. They're small enough that they don't suck up everything. We didn't hit a ton of balls.
They were fair. I felt like they were the ones at Birkdale were probably more of like just a full shot penalty.
Yeah,
these were like a half shot penalty. So I don't think I hit into one until 9 today. But like they were just, they still allowed you, they almost tempted you to go for it and then kind of thread the needle as far as trajectory goes.
Yeah.
And then 11 was like a 600 yard par five.
We played at 540.
Okay. I just wanted to
I know you hit driver out the deck.
So I was 285 out. You'll see the video. We're going to post it. Probably the best shot I hit all trip. To be honest,
It was delicious. It was beautiful. Smoke driver off the deck, off that kind of turf, downwind. It's going to run forever. You got to the front.
Again, just like rolling fairway, like just rolling. It was like a set of waves coming in all the way down the end. But yeah, I mean the bunkering there, fantastic again. And then 12 was a cool little par three. 13 was a really, really good short four.
Yep.
Like only 340, 350 yards. But again, 340, 350 yards, you've got like 12 bunkers on it. 14 was long, long par four. And then really, I mean, it was you close it out with six straight par fours.
They're all different. They're all...
Yeah, there was a lot of variety. Like, you know, they were... And they're all facing different directions, too, I think. So
18 wasn't the strongest finishing hole. I mean, it's only 390 or something for us. Even for the pros, it's not that long. But it is a great look at the clubhouse. Like, it's the clubhouse is just directly behind 18th green again.
17 was exceptionally tough. Like...
That was tough.
So we were talking about Adam Scott bogeying the last four holes.
Yeah. To lose
when he lost to the big sleazy. And that was, I mean, I can totally see him bogeying 17. Like, that's a hard-ass hole. And 15's hard, too. So, but like, 16 and 18 are...
They weren't too
There's
tough.
No excuse to blow it in that bunker on 18. No. But, yeah, I mean, 17 had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15... 17 has 16 bunkers on it. Each of them is like that was a minefield driving it off the tee. And then 18 has...
I take back what I said about 18. It's not a long hole.
18 has 17 bunkers.
But the way those bunkers frame is pretty fascinating. It's like a really cool visual line.
Yeah.
That's a funky shaped green around there.
I think that was... Maybe I just liked that stretch. I mean, I kind of felt like the course got a little monotonous towards the end, but 18 was just such a cool finishing to that classic clubhouse. Yeah. And I felt like if you hit a good drive into 18, you had a good shot at making a birdie.
Yeah, it's a gettable hole. Might be gettable.
So
that was like sad walking down that 18th fairway. It was a lot of golf in a short amount of time, but man, that was.
I mean, what 100?
And 108 holes.
108 holes.
Yeah, 108 holes in 4 days, like a little over, like 90, little 76 hours or so.
James, our host, he putted it
from 80 yards.
He nutted his drive on 18, and he putted it from, I think 80, 85 yards out on 18. He's like. He made it 3-putt par, I think.
He put it in the bunker.
He put it in the bunker.
But yeah, it's kind of hard to... I mean, it's 10 o'clock at night here. And
Litham, too. I think my other takeaway from Litham was how compact it was.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of this... Like, it's a big clubhouse complex, but the way that it fits on the land... The first tee's right next to the pro shop.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
The putting green is right there. Like,
kind of big range, too, though.
Yeah, they had like a little short awesome short game facility, little par three course. Just, I think out of all of them, they were all so different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I have a favorite, but I would say Lytham was the hardest golf course.
Yeah.
If they wanted to tune it up to
grow out the rough, we almost every course
rough,
we played
was that was the other thing, like
full rough.
Yeah. I feel like Birkdale probably had the most teeth of all the ones that we played at least this week, but Lytham, if they want to just, you know, turn up the volume there, they can really get in people's heads.
Yeah.
I mean, that was you get like Mike Davis out there with the USGA, like he could do some gnarly shit to that golf course.
Yeah. I mean, it's so kind of to wrap it up. I think you guys have, like I mentioned earlier, you've heard of Liverpool, Lytham, and Birkdale. We think the other courses we played here as well. And like I said, there's several more that we'd love to get to. Formby and
Hillside. Yeah, Formby and then...
Hillside were the top two recommendations that we didn't get to. We can't play every
course. Hillside's right next to Birkdale.
We did take the drone up and look at it a little bit.
And then Formby's kind of, I think, on the road towards Liverpool, like going to Royal Liverpool and Hoylake. So,
just the whole area.
Yeah,
and you can play so much golf. You can't, if you can, and that's where I wouldn't have known how to get tee times in all these places, how to do all that. If you wanted to use a trip planner like Golf Breaks, they can help you get on all of these courses. And it's not costing, like I said, not costing you anymore. And it's not the same stress as far as trying to figure out, you know, if I play here at 9 o'clock, can I play here at 2 o'clock? You know, these guys know how long it takes to get around.
I'll be honest. This is the first time I've ever been on like an organized, like professionally organized trip. Like normally it's just buddies and I bootstrapping it. And this was so much more enjoyable. And I felt like it was organized. Like James was, so he kind of heads up their US business. And like it was so like-minded.
It's people that know what you, like you tell them what you want, and it's not somebody sitting behind a desk and
trying to steer you to the resorts that they're getting these kickbacks from.
Yeah, it's not like some big expensive package that is going to cost you way more than if you
booked it
individually.
About the golf, and then if you wanted to do other shit and like eat good meals and that was there too, but the golf was first and foremost, and then you can even hire
drivers through them. Like they'll take care of your golf, your lodging, and your transportation, either that's rental car or whatnot. Again, it's overwhelming sometimes to kind of, especially if you're starting from scratch. If you do want to start from scratch, hopefully, you know, some of the courses that we talked about are on your radar and kind of help you start to plan that. But again, you can also just kind of pick and choose what courses you want to play. They can see what's available.
And like Alex, the guy we play with from National Club Golfer at Birkdale, he's from the south. Was it the southeast of England or southwest of England? Cornwall and down there. And he was just talking about the courses down there.
Yeah, that's what we need to do next.
St. Endot or something. And like, I was just like, dude, where do I sign up?
I know.
That sounded spectacular too. So
we can't get like a better like weather experience though than what we had. Like that's the thing.
Yeah,
we hit the absolute.
I kind of want it to just be like super shitty next time.
then you're gonna be realizing how good we had it for this time around. But anything else from the overall experience that we missed?
No, I mean Brits are hilarious. The best vocabulary, and they're so polite's not the right word. They're just so considerate of one another without even trying to be considerate. They're just naturally.
I still haven't figured out what to say when they ask. You all right?
You all right?
You all right?
Yeah. You okay? Huh?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yes, thank you.
I guess that's kind of a euphemism up here.
Yeah.
In this part of the country, but yeah, I think there's definitely a little bit of I don't want to say resentment towards the south of England.
There's rivalries.
Oh yeah,
there's rivalries. It's fun. It's fun to hear them talk about other people's accents too. There are so many different accents.
Yeah, Yeah, there was this guy that came and hammered.
Oh my god, this is a Scottish guy.
This morning, he's down from Edinburgh. It's like 7 a.m. We're leaving the hotel, and
he's arriving.
Yeah, he's arriving like straight from the bar or wherever, the strip club, and this dude, like, Solly just like kind of beelined it like over towards the door, and I'm like stuck talking to this guy for 15 minutes, and like I couldn't understand a fucking word he was saying. I was like kind of entertained, and then he started talking, and then he asked me how I felt about like American politics, and I was just like, oh shit, like
avoid.
Cut the cord,
avoid,
get it out of here
at all costs.
Yeah. So
alright, I think that pretty much wraps it. We're gonna bring James in here shortly to kind of tell you guys a bit more about other trips that Golf Breaks can help you with as well, not just an England style trip. So hopefully you guys find that beneficial. If you guys have any questions on the trip, email us, Solly@nolayingup.com, Tron@nolayingup.com, tweet us, whatever, DM us, Instagram message, anything. We'll be glad to help. We do these, you know, obviously the trip was for personal enjoyment for us, but as well, we really want to build out our travel section and kind of...
So going back, you said you've been to... Obviously, you've been to Scotland and Ireland.
Yep.
You've been to Bandon as well.
Mm-hmm.
You've been to Stream Song.
Yep.
Like, how would you say this was...
So, it's in the category of those. I refuse to rank one through five of those because it's kind of pointless. But, man, it's hard to...
But just as far as like the similarities, differences,
same kind of style. It's different style of Lynx golf, which if you can't tell from this, I'm obsessed with Lynx golf. It's different styles, yet and it's cool to see the different styles and the extremes at one end versus kind of the. I think it was a softer style Lynx than what I'm used to have played, mostly probably due to the time of year. But man, just to be on those places that are just fun to hang out with, just fun to be at, where you can feel comfortable. Yeah. A lot of times when I go to a course I haven't been to before, I just in general feel uncomfortable. I don't know where to go. I don't know what I should be doing. But around here, they make you feel so welcome that your whole time, your whole 5-6 hours you spent on the property is
you're not worrying about tiptoeing around.
No, like, you don't have to worry about
this. I mean, Liverpool. Like, really, Liverpool for me was like, I was like, man, like, I felt like we spent 8 hours there, and I felt like we spent 2 days there.
Yeah.
And it was just like, just soaked up the experience. I don't think I thought about anything else, not anything about work or anything
except
else.
Your wife.
Except for my beautiful wife for like the entire time we were there. It was awesome. I love you, babe. But then I would say if you're an architecture nerd, Lytham is like
right up your alley.
That was probably, from an architecture perspective, that was one of the probably top two or three coolest courses I've ever played.
Yeah, I'm not an architecture nerd. I'd rather give feedback kind of on the experience because I'm not an expert enough on the architecture to speak on. I would love to hear what architecture, golf course architects would say about some of these courses, the criticisms that I maybe would not have noticed. But for me, the whole, you just have to have an attitude for Lynx, just taking it as it is and not expecting to feel comfortable on every shot and just having to swallow your pride on a lot of shots. And I love that challenge. I love it. I love the thinking. I love
and being able to putt from wherever you want.
It's addicting. It's a drug. Now you're going to take that back to the States. You're going to start putting from
everywhere. I already do it in the States, but I can't get away with it. Like, there were a couple instances where I putted out of the rough. Like,
yeah,
I felt like
we got videos of that.
Was like one of the ladies that I used to make fun of at my home club growing up. Like, I was doing the same stuff. A bad putt's better than a bad chip, though.
So, yeah, we're definitely gonna, clearly this will be part two. If you listen to this now, we're gonna break this up into two parts. But we're gonna bring James in as well to talk to you guys a bit about some other things. And otherwise, like I said, please let us know if you guys have any questions on anything. And hopefully you guys found this valuable as you go. Again, I hope you find incentive as well, if you can't hear the way we're speaking about the experience, to just bite the bullet and start planning this trip and go for it. It's some of the best golf experiences I think you could have.
It's pretty easy to get to.
It's doable, yeah.
I mean, you can find a Manchester, I flew into London, Heathrow, a guy to direct from Miami. I think, like, if you're up in Boston, I think Virgin is starting a direct from Boston to Manchester a couple times a week. So you fly over on that. Obviously from JFK, you fly over. I mean, shit, you can find a cheap flight into Dublin and take the ferry over to Liverpool. I mean, there's, it's like trains, planes, and automobiles. There's a ton of different ways to get here. So,
all right, man, let's wrap it.
Cool.
Cheers to a great trip. Thank you, guys. All right, we're welcoming in James Summerside from Golf Breaks, who was our fantastic third this week. Taught us so many British phrases. How ready are you to get rid of us at this moment?
I'm ready to sleep. It's been a long week and, a lot of driving, but a good week. And, I'll sleep well, I think.
And thank God you were driving.
Yeah, driving on the left side of the road is terrifying.
Like, I kind of forgot about that when I flew in. And then, like, got in the car, like, holy shit.
We're going the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then you come out of some of those roundabouts and then make another
turn. You don't know which way is what.
I'm like, yeah, like, it was like doing a dizzy bat relay or something like that. It was nuts.
But man, so you said it was a lot of driving. See, for anyone listening to this from the States and for us, that was not a lot of driving. Yeah. How far was it
from the Belfry to Liverpool?
Mileage wise, it's not too far. We sort of went in the evening, so there was a bit more traffic. It was probably took us, about an hour and a half in the end, maybe 2 hours. But that was with sort of my ill sense of direction in Liverpool city centre, which probably added 25 minutes to that journey.
It's all part of the experience. But, all right, so anyone listening to this probably is at least remotely interested in planning some kind of trip. We talked a lot about how that could happen with England. What do you guys have going on at the moment? If our listeners are going to benefit something from listening to this, what would you say?
Well, first of all, tell us, like, Golf Breaks,
yeah,
background.
I jumped too far in.
Who you guys are. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, no, the company's been going for almost 20 years now, and it started over here in the UK. Started very much almost doing Ryder Cup style matches. So getting groups of guys going relatively local, staying within the UK, places like the Belfry and Celtic Manor. As the business grew and more people became interested in coming on board in terms of hotels and courses, we sort of offered the wider UK and Ireland, Scotland market, eventually going into Europe, which we send most of our clients now are either UK to UK or UK to Spain and Portugal predominantly, but elsewhere in Europe. And then recent years we've sort of expanded then further to offer places like South Africa, Mauritius, obviously the US as well. So we'll do a fair bit around the Masters, but then people going just to Florida or South Carolina or Arizona on their own breaks. And then a few years ago, sort of looked at the business model, and we've obviously got such great connections to all these courses and all these hotels within the UK. It made sense to offer those same packages to Americans wanting to come across. There was obviously a demand for those courses, in particular in Scotland and Ireland originally. As we sort of joked about a bit this week, I think Scotland's the home of golf and everybody wants to play there, and every American or every other American I know thinks they've got an Irish uncle somewhere or cousin or heritage. So it's quite nice to be able to offer those packages. But then obviously England's been one that's sometimes gets overshadowed, so it's quite nice this week to show off some of what I think is the best links golf anywhere in the world, let alone on our offerings, I think.
I mean, you guys, how does the process work for setting up a trip? So if I want to set up a trip, do I tell you what I want to play, where I want to stay? Do you make suggestions on that? How does planning something like that work?
It can sort of go either way. You can come with very direct, we want to go and play, you know, Birkdale, Wallasey, the courses we played today, and we'll get you the best rates, we'll find you the best hotels, we'll sort out the ground transportation, all of that sort of stuff. Or you can come to us and say, hey, we want to go to Scotland, we've heard about this course, or we want to go to Ireland, we've heard about that course, or whatever it is. And we can give you our expertise based on some of those courses, as we talked about this week, that places like Wallasey and West Lancs, which may not be on the tip of the tongue for people, even people within the UK when they're looking at Lynx Golf. Our knowledge of those courses we think is pretty good, and so very few people I think will play the calibre of the courses that we play, particularly over a weekend. You know, it's a lot of intense golf, but breaking up a trip to somewhere like a Birkdale and a Lytham with somewhere like a West Lancs and a Wallasey is something that not everybody's going to know what those courses are. So we're more than happy to sort of suggest and put things together if you want to go down that route.
It sounds so much sexier when you say it. Wallasey.
Wallasey.
Even he was butchering it right there. We said, we're not going to say it anymore until James comes
West
back.
West Lancs.
West Lancashire.
West Lancs. What's your favourite British saying that you've taught us this week? That can be repeated.
get a wiggle on was a good one when we were...
we were running a bit behind. Right.
Yeah, get a wiggle on. Pissed up was a good one. I can say pissed up because you guys use pissy and piss a lot more liberally than we do. So that's okay. Yeah, there's a few, most of which probably aren't suitable for people on their morning commute.
Yeah, I learned more new uses for already familiar four-letter words this week.
I've got my forte is self-deprecation.
Yeah.
So there's, I can put them to good use in that vein.
I wrote a few down. Pissed up, peckish, and put the piss on them. Those are my favorite.
Put the piss on them wasn't mine. That was Alex.
That was Alex, yeah. I still don't know what that means, but that
peckish was
cool.
Peckish is a pretty regular one. We're talking to Todd as well. There's about 8 different names for what you'd call a bread roll within about 20 miles. It all happened to be within... Yeah, bat. We had a batch
bunch,
this week.
Batch.
A bun, all of those things. A cob. So that was quite interesting. just looking at all the menu choices this week and trying to decipher what you guys actually wanted versus what was written down.
Good to hear. All right, for our US listeners, tell us a bit about the Mexico promotion you guys are doing.
Yeah, so we've got a trip over to Mexico at the moment, a sweepstakes giveaway. We're trying to raise awareness a little bit that we're also now starting to offer some of the Caribbean and Mexico destinations. So in particular, the Dominican Republic and Mexico. So we're doing a sweepstakes in the moment where you can win 4 nights all-inclusive break for 2 people. We'll sort out all the golf, all the hotels. You've just got to get yourself there. All the details. We'll fire things out in a link. I think it's probably the best way of doing it.
Yeah, we'll share the link. And it sounds like a pretty fantastic giveaway.
And really, as far as, coming to a place like England, like I was floored going through a company like Golf Breaks. And then I can't imagine organizing a golf trip to, say, Mexico or the Caribbean myself. With all the other variables down there, it was very necessary here, and it's like beyond necessary there.
It's the local. We came to your home country, so we got the local treatment and the local knowledge. But you guys have a ton of experience putting these kind of things together. So I think I've had several people tell me when they've tried to plan a trip, they don't know where to start, they don't know what to do first.
Or if you're going to the Caribbean or Mexico and you're going to stay in a particular resort, like they're more likely to, they're going to push you to play that resort or the concierge there. Like they're getting, there's certain relationships there. Whereas they can come to you and say, hey, here's kind of 1 or 2 courses I really want to play. Can we build a trip around that?
Yeah. I think the big thing for us, and we talked about it again a bit this week, is that there's a lot of elements that go into booking these travels. Somebody's got to sort the flights, somebody's got to sort the taxi from the airport, the hotel, the tea times. As we sort of know, some of the tea times are variable today, and if you've got relationships with those golf courses, you can move them around a little bit. And it can be 10, 12, 20 hours of work for 1 or 2 guys to go and plan a trip like this, or you can just tell us what you want in 20 minutes and we'll sort of sort it all out for you. So that's really what we're trying to get the message out there, that there is somebody willing to help you with these trips.
That people at the clubs. We go to the clubs, you speak to somebody by name that you know and have a history with, and that makes a huge difference when you go. Like I might not be able to call somebody up and get a tea time. You know somebody and you may...
I've never been somebody... So like I work in the hotel industry, so I've never been somebody that's... Shit, I'm never going to book another golf trip myself.
You seem like one of the people that attaches onto a trip versus playing.
Yeah, that's probably true as well.
But he's not the lead book on any of this.
But like, but you might pay a little bit more going through you guys, but it was like the cost benefit analysis of that.
You might not pay.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like what, you're gonna save like $70 in the long run or something like something like that versus like you're not gonna get stood up at a hotel or like if you have a problem you have some recourse with this. Like that was my thing. It's like at the end of the day, it's like money in the couch cushions as far as what you're gonna save doing it yourself and
maybe
the time element. Yeah.
And if you value your time at X per hour as well, all that sort of stuff. And yeah.
Just sanity too, yeah.
As Sully says, we've dealt with these guys for 20 years, so you know, we get good rates at the courses in particular as well. So yeah, it can work out a fair chunk cheaper coming through us, but
yeah.
It doesn't always, but yeah, it certainly will work out a hell of a lot of effort, or a lot less effort, sorry.
But you're not paying a bunch out of pocket to go with you guys.
That was
my big takeaway. I was shit, like, what's the downside here?
It can seem like it when you look at it like a lump sum, but then when you're breaking up your own costs as well, and it's, I don't know, these trips are, like you called it, the trip of a lifetime earlier, and it is. I mean, these weeks are weeks you remember and talk about and joke about forever. I still have a text thread with my buddies from Scotland that we went to 2 years ago. And like these things should be done right. And if you're going to make the effort to come all the way across or the pond to come here, or going to go to Mexico, Dominican Republic, you want somebody looking out after you and you guys want your users to walk away saying they had a great experience. That to your users is priceless, because you guys are going to, you know, if something goes wrong at any point, you're going to remedy in some way. Yeah. So, like you said, there's recourse within it. So,
I mean, like being in the industry, like that's everything. It's relationships, like not having to call into some, you know, call center and be like, you know, sit on hold for a while versus just, you can call somebody up and say, hey, fix this.
Yeah.
We for our UK business, we send people to the Middle East, and like, a few weeks ago, someone's taxi didn't turn up. Like, imagine trying to book your own cab when your cab hasn't turned up in Dubai, when you don't know the language, trying to Google taxi in Dubai, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, the calls, they actually got in touch with Facebook, we're straight on it, sort it out within 5 minutes, and then a new cab turns up.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of thing where you don't want to feel the pressure as a, right. You know, someone to sort like yourself, particularly, you know, with regards to Mexico and the Dominican at the moment, like, which may be new countries to you, which may be a different language if you're in certain parts of those countries too.
And like I said earlier, people can, you know, say to you, I want to play this, 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 and this course. But if somebody doesn't know all the courses well, you guys know at least options to send people to. And we didn't start this trip like, hey, we want to play this, this, and this. You came up with a lot of these courses that we played, and we walked away blown away from all of them for the most part. So
good.
So
talking about England too, like we were talking about, which other coast were you saying?
Yeah, so down in Kent, you've obviously got Royal St George's, where the Open is in 2020, and Prince's, which is right next door. You know, two fabulous venues down in Sandwich, which, you know, the accommodation is just on point there. It's everything set up for golf. It's like what you experienced this week, and it's dry because it's sandy. So, and it's a bit warmer because it's down on the south coast, although we didn't quite need that this week. And then, yeah, so they're sort of the linksy areas. Then you've got some of the areas closer to London, which are sort of the Surrey Heathland belt. So you've got places like Sunningdale and Fox Hills, and, you know, near to where Wentworth is, where, you know, people will be familiar with from tournaments in the past there. So there's a couple of really great golfing destinations in England. And don't get us wrong, we do a lot of business with Scotland and Ireland, and we're not trying to put people off going to those destinations. But, you know, if you've done there, or you don't fancy Scotland, or, you know, even if you're in London for the week and you want to tag on 3 days, you know, at the end of your business trip to go and stay at somewhere like the Grove or the British Masters last year, it's like 20 minutes from the central London.
Right.
You know, you can get out there. It's a great location. You can go and play sort of 20 or 30 courses within an hour's drive from there. It's just letting people know that it's not the be all and end all to go and play St Andrews or Royal County Down or Portrush. You know, these places are great, and we highly recommend them. But
or some of these people, I mean, a lot of the people listening to this probably have played the, you know, some of them have played those courses.
Yeah, too. If you've done those, a lot of our clients are pretty seasoned travelers. I don't think you go to, these places on a whim. Like they're going to be, you know, a fair chunk of your budget to go and play anywhere in Scotland, Ireland, or England. So it's not something you do decide on the last minute. So you've probably been there before, or if not, you've done a bit of research. So, if you fancy somewhere else, England, you know, as far as I can tell, has the best. Some of the best golf in the UK and some of sort of my favourite courses of anywhere I've played in the world.
Can we talk about your cheeky four-wood?
Cheeky? It's a four, yeah, I'm a four rescue. It's a, I decided about 2 years ago that I'm not good enough to play long irons anymore. So I just replaced them and hit it from anywhere from about 70 yards in, I think.
And your 85-yard putt.
And my 85-yard putt. It's helping with the... My chipping has been a bit yippy, to put it politely, and it's harder to duff or thinner 75 yards.
The word yip has been used way too often this week.
I thought I was... I kind of pulled myself back from the brink today.
You were a little yippy.
At Walsley, I was...
still didn't say it right. No.
Walsley. I was, I think, 8th or 9th hole, like, I was rapidly approaching a dark, dark alley, and there were demons coming for me, and then I kind of pulled myself back from the brink there.
Todd's comment when I took the wrong bat today, and he had to use my lob wedge, and I really like the way it sits really tight behind the ball. Like that's the exact reason I don't like it, because that's where I hit, like, not the ball behind it, and it digs in, goes about 2 yards forward.
That's why I don't carry a lob wedge. Maybe that's why I thought it looked so sexy, because I hadn't seen one in so long.
There's not many easy places to chip from, at least from the courses that we kind of played from. No. You're better off taking the four.
That's why you have to putt it.
That's why you have to putt it.
I'm about 3 rounds away from buying one of those Odyssey chippers.
Oh, come on. I'm you so already funny. Started the trip playing yellow balls, man.
Yeah, we get out there, we're like, hey, man, like, we didn't know James all that well at this point. We're playing with him, and I'm like, man, like, I'm gonna have to crop your balls out of these photos because people are gonna absolutely light our asses up on Twitter.
You did warn us.
I know. I was so tempted to rock up in a white belt first round, pink tee, yellow ball, just go full whole hog.
Well, actually, yeah. Can we talk about? So, I did not feel like ironing my pants.
We got to talk about this.
So somebody roasted me for wearing, like, rain pants on Thursday.
People think roast my swing is now a full-time thing.
It's like roast my attire. And then Friday I wore khakis. Just like these, you know, nice khakis that I have. And we had gotten in relatively late to Liverpool, checked into the hotel, and then... Like, the last thing I wanted to do in the morning was iron my pants.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm trying to talk Solly into wearing a white belt. Like,
he
was disappointed he didn't. Like, it was... You had the blueberry outfit on.
I did not have the blueberry outfit. I had the blue pants, and you wanted me to wear
blue white pants belt. With a white shirt, and he was like, man, like, white belt actually would look really good with this outfit today.
And you said it would, and I knew you were just messing with me. I didn't fall for it.
But
what I really like is you've let it go. Like, nearly 3 days later, you're over the khaki pants comments.
Well, so this guy...
I'm going to find it.
So Solly puts it up. So Solly puts a picture up on Instagram, and people just start lighting me up for...
Ryan T. Beach, is Tron wearing PacSun khaki jeans? Dear Lord. Laughing my ass up, Tin Cup. Laughing my ass up. Tron wearing those Kirkland signature pants. Tron, you cannot be the arbiter of golf style and roll out in skinny jean khakis. Matt Jarvis, your boy, please tell Tron to take that three-ring binder he calls a yardage book out of his skinny jean pocket. Jim Harbaugh saw how khakis look on you and decided today he can no longer wear khakis. Where's the iron one? Was that on Twitter?
What was that one?
The ironing one. Did I say that one already? Ironing your pants.
I think somebody mentioned it offhand, yeah. But there was too many to keep track of. But yeah, like I went like my game was a shell of itself for about 6 holes after that. Like
2 holes later, you bring it up again. These pins aren't that bad, are they?
Well, this is like on the heels of roast my swing.
I think it was mentioned on about the 12th hole or something in the final sort of 7. It was every third shot. Are these okay? Honestly, I can get away with it. It's fine, isn't it?
It was.
Yeah, deep but then in your so head. Then yesterday James rolls up. Like, see him in the hotel lobby, and he's like, bitches, my outfit is on fleek today.
It was murdered out with a touch of gray to it.
And then Sally was wearing the bone gray pants, the K-bone pants, yeah.
I didn't get too much heat from you. I was very conservative in all of my dress this week, because I was with Tremont, the arbiter.
And I tried to, so I was at, I don't know, like one of the 9 golfsmiths in Naples, Florida. Like, I thought the golf industry, like the golf, like retail industry, was absolutely dying until I went to Naples, Florida for a couple weeks. And there's a PGA Tour superstore next to a golfsmith, next to like an Edwin Watts. Like, it was insane. But they had these gloves on sale. I almost bought Sally a pair of Skechers for the trip over here, but then. They had these Under Armour like blue and green like camo gloves on sale, and I bring it over to Sally, and he's like, "This thing's awesome."
I liked it. I mean, it worked. It kind of went with the blueberry outfit. It was sweet. It was on Twitter. Jay Moore said, "Tron's high on golf fashion and look, but forgot to iron his pants. Almost as whack as Bagdad Jerry's shoes."
Which, yeah.
So.
Pushcart
Mafia. We didn't talk about
that. Shit.
You're in.
Dude, yes. Like, my back and shoulders would have been jelly without that. I mean, we played 108 holes in 4 days.
It's the courses here are designed for that kind. Like, yeah. A lot of places in the
So US that was, yeah. So I, like, even some of the courses in the States, like, I've used the pushcart, like, out of Essex and, like a couple other. Like old school classic designs in New England, where it's like green and tee box are right next to each other, and even there, you still had to like worry about logistics of like, all right, I have to go around to this side. And whereas here, it was just like, man, like I will never carry my own bag again.
Ooh.
If I don't have to, like it was, I don't give a shit how it looks. Like I.
That's the part people need to get over, because I've said this before on podcasts, like if we're ranking like manliest things you can do, it's carry your own bag, then it's walk with a trolley, as they call them here, or a push cart. Third is have a caddy carry your bag for you. Fourth is ride in a cart. All right. So unless you walk with carrying your bag every single
time. And I'm not endorsing it for like NCAA championships, I do think it's bullshit that they're using a push cart there. Like, I still think that sucks. Like competitive golf, I think you need to carry your bag.
For me, it's if you're going to play a lot of golf, that's the key. If I'm going to walk 18 holes, I'll carry my bag.
Exactly.
But if I'm walking 36, no way. No
exactly.
Way. The single worst part about it is how bad it looks in photos.
That's
it
the worst.
Ruins like
so many
some great golf course.
We need some Photoshop help for a lot of the photos and videos on this trip. So
yeah, there were some. Yeah, I mean, people were throwing haymakers. Like, oh, like nice full cart. Like,
I brushed that off.
Yeah, man. I don't.
Go play.
Like, your opinion is wrong.
Play 10 rounds of golf over here and tell me you don't enjoy playing it with a trolley more often. So.
So.
I think that's it.
I think that wraps it, man. James, anything else to add?
No, it's great to have you guys across. We need to do it again. Try and get the other two across at some point.
Yeah, Neil and Big Randy.
We missed you.
Yeah, yeah.
So thinking of you.
Solly called this like a spiritual pilgrimage, which that was really evocative of like a Randy take. So we need to get your ass over here on
we
the next
did
trip.
Sit in the clubhouse at Liverpool, and you said that Randy would have just like
Randy would have just been fully erect the entire time. So
So well, I speak for, I think I speak for Tron as well, saying thank you, James, for having us out for a truly special experience. Endorse the treatment we got for it and the courses that we played and the whole experience.
Just,
so.
just like-minded golfer probably will be a friend for a long time.
Yeah, so. Man, it's hard to say goodbye. So, but we got to. Cheers, until next time.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!